Phil Hendry.
Right, welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I don't even know where the hell we left off. What were we talking about?
Well, you were watching the Macarena video.
Yeah.
No, but we weren't talking about the Macarena. We were talking about some other jive-ass. Oh, it was Mavis. Thank you, Mavis, wherever you are. She had to go, and we let her go, and she was singing about gutting multinational corporations. That's it.
Well, no, she was singing about the Hokey Pokey.
Yes, did a Hokey Pokey.
She did the song that you wanted her to do. The whole idea was that, Margaret, you were making this point that these corporations go overseas, and so Mavis sang her song. We'll get back to that discussion in a moment. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're online at philhendryshow.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/PhilHendryFans and over at Twitter at twitter.com/RealPhilHendry. Our congratulations to our Backstage Pass family member of the week, and that is Bonnie Kluwer. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Bonnie. Bonnie Kluwer of the state of Washington, and Bonnie is the winner of, we didn't know what to give her. What did she?
Bonnie wants the Phil Hendry Show mug, and we're going to give her the Phil Hendry Show mug.
So I think that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, let them pick what a thing they want.
God, man.
What's up with you, man?
What? I was trying to think, I'm trying to remember, you jerk.
Okay, well, all right, bud. You know, you are a professional pronouncer here, man. So anyway, yeah, that's a good way. When we do name our BSP member of the week, they can pick what prize they want from our shop. How about that? I guess we'll be giving away a whole lot of hoodies. Actually, she didn't want a hoodie, though.
No, she didn't. She didn't like the hoodie. She thought it looked like a rag that she'd soak up oil in the garage with. And
wait a minute. She didn't say that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe she already has one. But anyway, it doesn't make any difference.
Yes, there is a big difference, Mark. There's a difference between saying, I don't want the hoodie because I already have one, or I don't want the hoodie because it looks so lousy I wouldn't soak up oil in the garage with it.
What difference does it make?
Yeah, it really doesn't matter, Mr. Henry.
Yes, it does matter. Yes, it does matter.
Why?
Because there's people out there that are hearing us talking about the Teds of Beverly Hills hoodie, and you guys are disparaging it, and I don't think it's fair. It's a great hoodie. We've sold a lot of them. It's quality, too, baby. 100% cotton. It ain't no, you know, this is a beautiful thing, man. The Teds of Beverly Hills logo. We've got, we want to put our meat in your mouth on the back. Perfect to wear over to Grandma's house.
Right.
But, you know. All right, so congratulations, Bonnie, and we'll do another one for our Backstage Pass members this week. Also, we're going to get ready to give away a free BSP for a year, another one. Anyway, during the presidential debate last Tuesday night, Mitt Romney's repeated refrain was, I know what it takes. Well, through this entire debate and for much of the recent weeks of the campaign, he hasn't really answered the question. Well, what exactly, when you say you know what it takes, tell us what does it take? So if you know what it takes, give us an idea. According to the author, and this is, by the way, this is appearing in the Washington Times community, Social Journalism from Independent Voices. The Washington Times sponsors this. And the Washington Times, I think, one, if you know the Washington Times, one could safely say, editorially, they're a conservative newspaper. So this forum that they provide for independent people is quite refreshing, I think, because you're not necessarily getting the conservative view. You're not necessarily getting the liberal view, you're getting what they are describing as an independent voice. And in this particular case,
well, he sounds like a born-again Democrat.
This time around, what independents understand that other voters don't understand is the following thing. That you don't drive a car at 55 or 60 everywhere you go. Sometimes you need to modulate. And if I'm talking like Margaret, this is when you need to modulate the speaking to emphasize Margaret.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But sometimes you need to modulate the speed and the power of the engine and the way you use that car. Such is the engine of government and private enterprise. You don't say,
the conservative way is always the way. The liberal way is always the way.
There are times when a society can be magnanimous, can afford perhaps to help out. When voters may vote and say, you know what, we've got a lot of money, we're flush. I don't know when the last time we could say that in this country. Well, I guess it was the 90s, so, you know, Democrats will take, you know, credit for that. And there were times the Republicans could take credit for that. And But the fact of the matter is, for all of society's ills, either side, Republican or Democrat, have always had their moment where they would take credit for, you know, fixing this, fixing that, something else. But what independents do, and this is why I admire them, and this is why I like to consider myself one, is they understand that you're not always going the same damn speed. You're not always using the same solution for every problem. It isn't intelligent. It's not what intelligent people do. It's not what normal people with functioning brains do. Only in politics do we do it. Only in politics do we say, one size fits all solution. And then every 4 years, what do we hear? The same damn thing. What's wrong with the country? Why can't we fix this? We got gridlock. How come this and how come that?
Well, so you're saying equally...
That makes a lot of sense, Mr. Henry.
But wait a minute. No, it does not. You're saying equally this is true of liberals.
Yes, I'm saying equally true of liberals. Why wouldn't it be?
You don't understand what liberals have done for this country, Phil. You just don't.
Oh, Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. More so than perhaps you know. I know exactly in every facet of American life throughout the history of this country, there were times when conservatives were needed. There were times when liberals were needed. There were times when we needed to tighten the belt. There were times when we needed to make with a little more government. We couldn't have got. I often use this example, and people just don't get it. Or they get it, and it pisses them off, and they don't want to get it. War is a perfect example of when government goes to work and is something, you know, that, you know, government can, you know, what has government ever done? Well, how about World War II? Does that make any sense to anybody? How about going to the moon? Is that something? And every stupid ass that I talk to who is a conservative that always likes to say government's never fixed anything and done anything, they've always got some really moronic and completely beside the point excuse for that.
Like what?
Well, I'll say to them, how about the moon mission? What has government ever fixed? Well, how about going to the moon? Yeah, well, that was done with a lot of private companies. Well, of course. Nobody's saying that it wasn't. It was marshaled by, organized by, the energies funneled by, and directed by the government. The United States government. Of course they were using private industry, just as we did during wartime, using private industry. Just as we do now. Just as we do now. But... you know, in liberals, the same. Liberals are just as stupid, especially when it comes to defending this country. At one time, liberals ran this country and led the fight against fascism in Europe. And since that time, I don't know what the hell happened. And they got an excuse out of it. Even if they have to talk down their own country, even if they have to say that America is corrupt, that America is a decrepit shell of its former self, that America is nowhere near what it ought to be or could be. I mean, liberals will do, and a lot of conservatives, too. Will talk down the country rather than give up their political point of view.
Yay! Once again, you're giving a speech.
All right, if it's a speech, does it make sense?
I don't think so, and here's why. You say that there are times when you modulate the speed. I think when it comes to government, I just think we have to be going 90 miles an hour at all times.
Yeah, well, you said we ought to gut a fish.
I said gut these corporations.
Yeah, well, that's your solution. You want to gut and let the gut spill out? I mean, you want to take a knife to everything, Margaret? You're just, you know, it's like you want to slash and burn. And that maybe there's a time to slash and burn, but this isn't it. Anyway, that's what independence, I think, and that's why more and more people are becoming independent, because they feel the way I do. What the hell? Why are we always, every 4 years... having to be witness to these two imbeciles, Mr. Conservative and Mr. Liberal, with the exact same bullcrap that they were laying on us 4 years ago, the same stupid solutions, the same fault-finding, the same excuse-making, and ultimately the same failure, because they only want to do it one way, every way.
Well, I mean, so you're saying there shouldn't even be no party.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't even want to talk about this anymore. It's making me want to vomit.
Me too.
Thank you. All right, we'll be right back to Phil Henry Show. Other news, the Giants top the Cards. They've forced a game six. However, we are predicting a Cardinal and Detroit Tigers series. I could be wrong, but we've got some background on the Cards and the Tigers down through the years in the World Series. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth. He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. world-famous Bill Hendry Show.
So the San Francisco Giants are trying to win the National League pennant. The St. Louis Cardinals, the defending World Series champions, are trying to wrap it up. The Giants have forced a sixth game. They did this in St. Louis. They had Barry Zito on the mound. Barry Zito, a former Athletic A who won the Cy Young in 2002. He scattered six hits. He allowed... he scattered six hits and struck out six, 7 2/3 innings, and that's a nice little tidy outing. And he won the game, 5-0. So now the Giants take it back home. And
well, the Giants, you know, are hated here in the Los Angeles area. But as a frequent visitor to San Francisco, the Opera House, Nob Hill, the Marina, I love it.
Yeah, it's got San Francisco. We're talking about the Giants.
So... That's the Giants are from there.
Right. Well, you're giving us a catalog, a travel log on...
I'm trying to be relevant.
Well, okay, thank you, Margaret.
And I love San Francisco. I'm a native of... Well, I live in Los Angeles, and you're supposed to hate San Francisco if you live in Los Angeles, because they hate us.
Do you really think they hate us, or they just like making fun of us?
No, they hate us. San Francisco hates Los Angeles in much the same way that Philadelphia hates New York, and New York never thinks about Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Oh, New York. Well, do you think San Francisco thinks about us?
Well, I think San Francisco thinks about us, and we don't think about them, except when it comes time to take a weekend away, and we want to go to a nice place. We go, oh, let's go to San Francisco. Well, they hate us up there. Oh, really? I didn't know that, because we just don't think about it.
I think that what Margaret just said there is actually very accurate, and I don't mean that as any disrespect to San Francisco. I think what that means is basically this. No matter how much San Francisco hates us here in L.A., we always will go to San Francisco for a weekend, enjoy the restaurants, and...
Everybody said they go to a restaurant, but one of the things you never want to talk about is a lot of people go up there to...
Oh, man, are you... He's talking about that movie again. What movie?
A lot of people go up there to jump.
Oh, were you talking about the bridge?
Oh, the bridge. Why did you make me think of that movie, bud?
That's why people go there.
Oh, get out of here. They go there.
Man, that movie is creepy.
It's a sad movie. It's a sad movie. There was, for those of you who don't know the movie The Bridge, I watched it because it's available on YouTube, and it's quite a, it's a devastating movie. It's a sad movie. It's a movie about this, the Golden Gate Bridge, and in, I think the year was 2002.
Oh, my God, now I remember.
Yeah. I think it was 2002. And there's a lot about this movie that's very unusual. But in, to make a long story short, in 2002, they had a record number of people jump from the Golden Gate Bridge to commit suicide. Now, the thing about this film that's rather disturbing in its own way, and I'm not blaming the filmmakers necessarily, is that they had cameras set at different angles around the Golden Gate Bridge, and they had people manning those cameras, obviously, because there was zoom lens being used. The camera position and the, what it was shooting was changing. And so, of course, one of the things that I thought was, well, while you're making these movies, why don't you do something to try to save people's lives? And I think that those questions were asked. And Margaret?
Well, one of the things, they were so far away from the bridge, you could get on the phone and call the police and have the police arrive, but you didn't know which of these people was going to jump.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You didn't know they were going to jump till they jump.
That's a good point, except for that one guy.
The one young man in the black leather.
Yeah, there was one guy in the black leather with the long black hair. In fact, he reminded me, if you're listening, Chris, he reminded me of my old screener back at Clear Channel, man, Chris Pelton. He looked exactly like Chris. Long black hair, the black beard, and he wore...
Maybe it was him.
What?
Well...
Yeah, that's right, but it was him. Yeah, it was Chris, yeah. In fact, I just saw him. I'll ask him next time I see him. Was that you that jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge?
Oh.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Well, you say stuff that's dumb, too.
Not like that, I don't. Anyway, so next time, make a note.
Yeah, I will. I'll make a note.
Yeah, I'll do it. Shut up!
No, bud. The next time we see Chris was, hey, Chris, did you jump off the Golden Gate Bridge? I think I saw you in the movie, and you died? Yeah. Anyway, the filmmakers had set up cameras from different angles, and when that young man finally does jump, and they have a lot of footage of him pacing back and forth, I don't know why they decided to follow him. They certainly didn't know his story. They went and got the stories of these people after they jumped. But the thing about this movie, folks, that you have to understand is you see these people jump. And it's jarring. It isn't like Faces of Death where, oh, I've seen people jump out of buildings, big deal. This is different. This is a sunny, beautiful day. A beautiful day on San Francisco Bay. The sun is shining. There's pedestrians, people walking back and forth, because you can walk across the bridge if you want to. And they're stopping, and there's balloons, and there's little kids with, you know, this and that, and there's, you know, a couple sharing a kiss. And it's a gorgeous day, and suddenly the camera will settle on someone.
And they have to have an instinct, didn't they?
Well, they had, like, the opening scene of the movie is disturbing, because they settle on an old man who's just staring into the water. And I think that became their cue. That became something they looked for. If they saw people standing and staring down into the water, they'd settle their camera on them. And the movie is rolling. The credits are rolling. The old man is looking. And suddenly he just climbs over the railing. And, man, he just dives in.
Did he dive? Or?
It was a half dive. It was like a half dive, half jump. And you don't even believe when you see it. You don't believe it when you see it. And the people that do notice it, the people that alerted the police, the people that there was the first people they interviewed, as fate would have it, this man and the camera followed him all the way down. And I got to tell you, if I'm a cameraman, I don't know how the hell I do that. But the camera followed this man all the way down to, and I think lost him because the speed of a body falling is a lot faster than we can imagine. But as the camera settles on the bay, here comes two windsurfers right for the point of impact.
Were they going over to try to save the guy?
They were going over because they saw something. And when they interviewed the guy said, I saw this, I couldn't believe it, but I immediately turned and went in that direction. And the Coast Guard, I think, was on scene pretty fast.
Well, they weren't able to save him.
No, they were not able to save him. He died. But there was one guy in that movie who survived. And this kid is this, you just feel so bad for him, man. You just want to cry. He's a teenager. He's a young man now when they're interviewing him. But he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and he survived. And he remembers waking up or coming to underwater.
Did he get knocked out?
I don't know. He just remembers. He remembers letting go. The thing that this kid said that blew me away, he said, I remember letting go and wanting to reach back and grab it.
Oh, man, he regretted it.
Yeah, he said, I remember letting go and thinking, oh, God, I don't want to do that. I want to grab it, and he couldn't. And now he's falling. When he came to or when he was conscious again, he was in the water, and he got out of the water somehow. It was raced to the hospital. He had multiple injuries, but nothing life-threatening, and he survived. And his father came to, and obviously this guy is very close to his dad, and they brought him home. And I remember him saying in the interview, he says, I wish people would stop looking at me like I'm a freak. In other words, they were saying, you know, he was saying that now at home, everybody, Johnny, are you okay? Do you want to have another piece of pie? And everybody's treating me like I'm a piece of china, you know?
Well, I mean, my God, wouldn't you? You have someone that's jumped off of a bridge. And, you know, the last thing you want is them to do something ridiculous and jump off the roof of your house or something. And the next thing you know, you're sued. And I'm not saying, Phil, that I don't have compassion. But if I have a young man like that in my home, I'm keeping a good eye on him. And if he's saying to me, oh, I noticed that you have a balcony. No way. No chance at all.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what does that mean?
If you notice he's got a balcony, so what? You're not going to let him go up to the balcony?
I'm not taking the risk that he's going to do, as Tommy Lee Jones said in The Fugitive, a Peter Pan off of the balcony that we just built off of our master bedroom, no.
Because you don't want to get sued.
That's it, Phil. Make me out to be an ass even bigger than the ass that you are.
Oh, well, come on, Margaret. I'm just asking questions. You don't want to get sued, so you're not going to let the guy...
You don't want him doing the Peter Pan.
Yeah, well, no, I got him doing Peter Pan if you want to or not.
Yeah, you figure any guy wants to do the Peter Pan...
You know, a moment ago we were talking very sensitively about suicide. Now it's the guy doing a Peter Pan.
Don't just talk about a guy wanting to do Peter Pan.
Well, you know what, man? If I had a cat in my house that had just gotten out of the hospital for attempting suicide and had already been through the psychiatric evaluation, I'd probably be a little nervous, too.
Of course you would be. Are you going to let him go do a Peter Pan?
Will you forget the Peter Pan? We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you, Phil, for cutting me off. I was going to make a good point about... And Mary Martin, too.
Yeah, the green tights. Is a guy going to put on a green tight? What?
Yeah. Green tights? Yeah, all right. Sure. The guy's in green tights.
Phil Hendry.
No way does he get to go upstairs.
Does a Peter Pan.
Oh, God. You guys with the Peter Pan.
Well, I'm talking about, Phil, I don't want to be liable. And if you have someone that's, forgive me, cracked...
Yeah, you gotta be careful, Mr. Honey, gets one of these cracked nuts.
Get a nut up in your house doing a Peter Pan. And,
well, you guys really turned insensitive, didn't you? You know?
What do you mean by that?
Oh, doing the Peter Pan and you get a nut at your house. This movie, I guarantee you, once you see the bridge... unless you have no feelings at all, it will affect you. And it affected me, and I just was sad for these people. You know, and I got a fear of heights. I couldn't jump off a bridge, man, if they...
But how would you commit suicide?
I wouldn't commit suicide, man. I've never considered it.
You've never considered it?
No, I haven't seriously considered committing suicide, no.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you had to commit suicide, if a guy had a gun to your head.
Well, think about that, bud. If a guy had a gun to my head, I guess I'd say to him, no, I don't want to commit suicide.
Yeah, then he'd blow your brains out. So you'd have to.
Don't be stupid, man.
Oh, well, yeah, but, well, wait a minute. No. What I just said makes sense, and I'll tell you why, okay?
Yeah, I got to hear this. Go ahead.
Because if you're afraid to commit suicide, and a guy put a gun to your head and said, commit suicide... And you're afraid to commit a suicide? You wouldn't want him to shoot you, because that'd be like suicide, right?
Yeah, but then I'd have to commit suicide. See?
Well,
no, Bud's right.
Oh, Bud's right. Well, okay, Bud's right. Congratulations. Here, let me shake your hand. What do you got on your hand, Bud?
Pizza juice.
Well, what has it got in my hand for?
I didn't know you were going to shake my hand.
Wipe it off.
And, Bud, remember, wash after the toilet. Wash after the toilet. Remember that.
Yes, Ms. Gray, I've learned all the toilet habits from you.
Don't be a smartass.
All right. The point that I'm making is I had a fear of heights, okay?
You still do?
I still have a fear of heights. I still have a fear of heights. And heights scare me more than anything. Fire doesn't scare me. Fire doesn't scare. Fire scared the hell out of most people, and it should. But fire, not... Doesn't bother me, man. I can stick my hand into a fire to grab something. If something of value is burning, I will risk sticking my hand into the fire and pull. But heights, I will. And I can tell you that.
What about time, man? You said you went swimming.
No. I didn't go swimming. This was a trip. When I was young, we went up to Gainesville, Florida, because they were Russian fraternities, and there was a girl that we knew who was going to Gainesville, University of Florida. And she said, "Why don't you guys come on up? And it's free beer." You know, so you can pretend like you're going to Gainesville. You pretend like you're going to University of Florida to get the free beer. So we were going to all these parties that the frat houses were having and drinking their free beer. But the day that we got there, a whole bunch of these kids that she knew were heading out to this cow pasture outside of Gainesville. And she said, "Why don't you guys come on? We're going to go swimming." And we're like, "Where, man?" She goes, "It's really cool." And they had a name for it. It was called the Punch Bowl or the Cow Pit. Or
well, about near the cow pasture?
Yeah.
That was probably the cow pit.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know, Bud. How would you know?
That's what I'd call it.
Well, great. Well, call them up, man. Maybe they want to rename it that. Anyway, we went out to this thing, and she says, "Oh, yeah, everybody's going to go swimming." So I said, "Oh, okay, bring your swimming trunks." So we did. Well, we get out of the car, you know, and we park the cars everywhere, and we head out toward this clump of trees in the middle of this cow pasture. And what it is an underground... One of those little caverns that was shaped somehow in time past, and under this cow pasture opened up a large cavern with a pool of water. So you would jump into this hole in the middle of this cow pasture and splash into this pool of water that was in this cavern with the stalactites. It was very cool. The water was literally cool, not cold, but it was pretty refreshing. There was only one problem. You had to jump about 15 feet to get into the water.
Oh, yeah, everybody was jumping off?
Everybody. And some of the guys are diving, and I'm like, oh, man, oh, no, oh, no.
Were you afraid you were going to look scared?
Oh, yeah, of course, you know. I was like 19 at the time, and I'm like, oh, no, man, I got to do it. I got to do it. There's no way, you know. You get to that point, and you're that age, and you're also, you fear peer rejection more than you do breaking your neck on a, you know, on the bottom of some pool of water, so... I went ahead. I wasn't going to dive, but I went ahead and jumped in. Like, and it's like it's when you jump from that height for me, and you have a fear of heights. It's never you never are hitting. You're always just come on, man. Let me hit the water already. Bang, you know.
Yeah, but then you're not afraid no more.
That's true. That's true. The more you do it, the less you're afraid of it. And I think that that's probably the key to defeating a fear of heights is do it a lot. Go up, you know.
Get high. Yeah, get high. Yeah, man. Spark that out. Will you
shut up? So anyway, that was something that was one of those moments where I had to, you know, peer pressure alone forced me into doing something that I would never do in a million years, and that was to jump from a height that was, you know, scary into this water. Once I did it, it was kind of fun because you're in the middle of this cow pasture with this, you know.
Kids got their kicks in funny ways back then, didn't they?
Yeah, I noticed that. You got to have a video game, right?
No, wait, hold on.
You didn't have a video game, right?
No, we had no video games, no. But let me ask you a question. Are you telling me the kids today wouldn't do that?
Well, I think they have other things.
I don't agree. I think that if today there's a bunch of kids and they see a swimming hole, if you will, someplace, they're going to go swimming in it. You know?
That when they used to, like, take a tire and tie it to it on a string or something?
Yeah, they put a tire on a string and swing around.
Not a string, man. On a rope. You mean a rope?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they would hang a tire from a rope. That's kind of Southern stuff, man. I've never seen that in... You don't see it much in California because we don't have the kinds of... we don't have the number of lakes that they have down south, and you don't have lakes in all these nicely forested areas the way you do down there. Down in the southeast, in Florida, Georgia, places like that, there's always some cool tree hanging over a lake someplace, you know.
Yeah, but there's always some guy with a shotgun and, like, one eye in the middle of his forehead on account of all the inbred... You know?
Yeah, that's the danger.
One eye in the middle of his forehead.
That's what you said.
No, there's no such thing as that. Where did you hear that?
Mr. Henry.
Why do you tell them that?
I didn't tell him any such thing.
Well, yeah, you said that one time people be so inbred the two eyes come together at about three generations.
Yeah.
I never said that. Never. You guys are lying.
Then why did you say about a one eye?
I said...
So you did say that.
No, I did. Would you listen to me before you guys? I was reading the preacher. Are you an idiot or something? I never said you can get one eye after three generations of inbreeding.
You said on the. That's what you said was a. You said you thumbnailed it.
Thumbnailed it? You mean it was a rough estimate, huh?
Yeah.
You guys are full of crap. I never said any such thing. What I was talking about were the comics, that Preacher Gone to Texas comic series.
Yeah, you said that there was a guy with one eye that was inbred, and him and his brother would, like, you know, rape tourists and stuff.
No, man, no. You're an idiot. No, I never said. I said that in that comic book, the guys created some, you know, it's a fantasy comic, okay?
Well, it's based on reality.
No, it's not based on reality. You're a jackball, man. Tell me, let me ask you a question. How is this based on reality that the guy's best, he's a preacher and his best friend's a vampire, and his girlfriend has the power of, like, never missing with a gun, and he, the preacher, can make people do anything he wants by just saying, you know, one word? Is that based in reality?
I don't know. There are a lot of things that...
Is it? I'm going to ask you again, bud, and if you don't give me an honest answer, I'm going to kick your ass. Is it based in reality?
I don't know. Man, you can't kick his ass. What kind of question is that?
Are there vampires, bud?
No.
That's all I'm asking.
Well, you can't threaten him like that, though.
Oh, give me a break. So anyway, in that comic book, they created a character, a little one-eyed boy that was best friends with some other guy, and the kid was, you know, inbred. And I don't know, man.
But based upon that, Mr. Henry, did you or did you not estimate, an estimation... Of how many generations it take to get one eye?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Perry Mason.
Who's he?
All right. Wow. Woo! Man.
Well, Phil, you start this.
No, I didn't start anything. 877-876-7445. Now, look at this. This ought to be good. We got Jeff Dowder calling in here from Pasadena this evening. Going to give us... Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. I'm driving home over to just trying to take the truck route over to Mint Canyon, and I was trying to reach out a little extra time, and I did hear. I couldn't help but hear, and it's not that I didn't want to hear it, but I could prevent from hearing. You're talking about inbreeding and the likelihood of.
Yeah, is that possible, or Mr. Henry?
No, it's no. First of all, I can tell you that the genetic. So-called genetic mutation or malforming that a lot of people have made jokes about over the years, it's nowhere near the high percentage that people... There's very low incidence of genetic, a mutation and very low incidence of disease, you know. A lot of the disease we talk about when we talk about inbreeding is simply... inherited, genes that are disease prone, but that can happen in families what are not inbred. Okay.
What about having one eye?
Well, the one eye, I did take note of that, and no, it's not, man, it's not going to happen in three generations, you know.
Then why were you talking about it?
I wasn't talking about it. I was saying you could probably perfect the one-eyed man if you had. But you're going to have to have more. You would have to have a subject who has lazy eye or one eye that's no good, and then you just breed, find just one big eye. You know,
get out of here.
Well, wait a minute. I was
Did you hang up on him for?
That guy's about as nutty as you guys are.
That man's a mechanical physics professor.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, guess what? He's way out of his league here with the inbred thing and the one eye and the lazy eye. That's it. That's how they get one-eyed people. They find a guy with a lazy eye.
Well, it would stand to reason that eye... Well, never mind.
Yeah, uh-huh. Thank you very much for that enlightening conversation. All right, we're coming back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. I still want to talk about the Cards and the Tigers. This is pissing me off. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth.
What is Cards and Tigers?
Or
the fact you can't breathe.
The Phil Hendry Show.
We cannot perfect the one-eyed man. Yeah, the fact we can't perfect the Cyclops is really pissing me off.
That's weird.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right. So before we get too far afield, I just, we were looking at, and because if there's anything that keeps me interested in baseball, it's, and I'm sorry, but I've grown very detached from baseball, not for any reason other than it's me. It's nothing wrong with the game. It's just Phil Hendry. I've changed. Something happened to me. I don't know. I became such a football fan, and I've even found it difficult to be a football fan.
I think you, are you busier?
Yeah. That's part of it. I'm a lot busier. I used to have Sundays, and I had my little satellite dish, and I had every NFL game, and I hosted Super Bowl parties that were epic, man, but not anymore, dude. But baseball, I can, there's something about, you know, the very cool tradition of the game. Now, St. Louis and Detroit is one of those really cool World Series, or at least it's one of the cool World Series was the 1968 series. It was a 7-game series. It was coming hot on the heels of a season in which the Detroit Tigers had, for the first time in a long time, there was a 30-game winner in baseball. The 1968 Tigers had Denny McClain.
Now, Denny McClain was the gambler.
Denny McClain gambled. He didn't have the problem that some guys had, but yes, he did gamble.
Because I remember reading a story about him having some kind of a gambling problem.
He got into some sort of gambling trouble. To be honest with you, I don't know how much... I'm sure it was significant. But Denny McClain won 31 games. Now, even in 1968, and I was like a sophomore in high school at the time, I'd never heard of I'd heard of 30-game winners, but that was way back in the early part of the century. Nobody had won 30 games in a season in many, many years. Not in my lifetime.
What about a 400 year was Ted Williams?
Yeah. But and I don't think anybody's hit 400 since then. I don't think they have, but nonetheless, there was a 31-game winner in Denny McLain. He won the Cy Young Award that year. He was named the most valuable player in the American League that year. And on into battle they went against the St. Louis Cardinals of 1968, which was, this was a baseball team, the Cardinals of the 60s, that had won a World Series already. They had beaten the Boston Red Sox. I believe they'd lost to the Yankees in 64, but they were a very good team. And they had a good manager in Red Shandish. I think that they still had Stan Musial. I think he was still playing. Oh, no, he wasn't. Couldn't have been.
Stan Musial, he must have been 100 years old.
No, he, you know, I actually saw Stan Musial play when I was a kid.
Man, that shows how old you are, man.
Wait a minute. When I saw Stan Musial, he was old, man. I mean, by all rights, I never should have seen Stan Musial. I was at a game with my dad, I remember. I was 10 years old, and my father said, look, that's Stan Musial. And I knew the name. And sure enough, there's this guy coming up to bat. And he got on. He walked. And I remember it was at Dodger Stadium, and he got a standing ovation from the fans there.
Why? At the Dodger game?
Yeah. Why not?
That the Dodger game.
Man, they're gonna give a standing ovation to a big time guy.
Yes, they always do that for the big stars.
Bud, Stan Musial. It'd be like, of course you're gonna stand up and give an ovation. This was his last season, I think. That's why the Dodger fans, you know, he got on base and they gave him an ovation, and he was, you know, very gracious. He acknowledged the fans. That's all I remember.
Didn't you say you saw like Roger Maris too?
I saw Maris and Mantle when they wore Yankee uniforms. Yeah, I did. I can still see Mickey Mantle stand at the plate. He was a muscular guy. He was a big dude. Maris. I saw the Yankees when they came to L.A. That's the only time we ever went to an Angel game, is when the Yankees came to town, because that was the... They were still the tail end of that Bronx Bomber era. They had Whitey Ford, and they had Maris, and Barra was still...
Was he?
Yeah, Barra was still catching for him. And Maris was... And Mantle and all those guys. So, in any event... the 60s, the Cards were a good team. Now come the St. Louis Cardinals, and these guys are the defending champions, and the Detroit Tigers, you know, they won the series in 84. I think it'd be cool to see these two teams go at it again.
Well, I don't understand sports, but I do know in talking to Frank, and if you want, I can get him on the line.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, not, you know, I don't want to bother him.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea, because he's drunk.
All right, we didn't have to say that.
He's blind stinking drunk.
Okay, Margaret.
That's my whisper.
Well, everybody can hear it.
You say that, Phil, but you don't know that.
If you go...
He's blind, stinking drunk.
They're still going to hear it, because all they have to do is turn their radio up.
Well, I don't get that.
Yeah, Miss Gray, it stands to reason if you turn up the radio.
Bud, shut up.
But it stands to reason, Miss Gray.
Shut up. Anyway, Frank's drunk. All right, I'll say it. Frank, ladies and gentlemen, my husband, I love him very much. He's a wonderful man, but he's drunk. He's blind, stinking drunk at 11:53 Pacific time here in Los Angeles. There, are you happy?
Well, Margaret, you didn't have to make an announcement like it's the next train coming in from, you know, Clarksville. Or what, all you had to say is Frank is, you know, not, he doesn't want to go on the air.
I believe in truth in reporting.
Okay, so Frank's drunk, so otherwise we could talk to him about this. But, you were going to say...
But the tradition of baseball, as Frank has often said, is very, very important. It is much more important than in football, because baseball goes back so many generations and was enjoyed by a lot more people than football over a longer period of time.
All right, so the Cards and the Detroit Tigers, because of their 68 series, I don't know if that was the only other time they played in the only time they played in the series, but it was quite a series, and people will be looking forward to that. If it's the Giants and the Tigers, not a problem. I mean, it's old school, you know, and the only thing that I don't dig, and call me a snob, forgive me, Tampa Bay and all you guys, it's great, but, you know, World Series with the Diamondbacks and the, you know...
Yeah, I know what you mean, man.
I can't get excited about that. You know, when I see a team like that in a World Series, I want them to be throttled. I want them to be beaten into the dust. I'm not into it, okay? So this ought to be fun, and we'll see. Otherwise, forget about baseball.
Not going to watch that at all, huh?
Forget it. Football. All right. We want to remind you that online at philhenryshow.com, of course, is our website. That is our internet resource for the Phil Hendry Show. There's thousands of hours of radio shows there. There are many hundreds of hours of video cast there, including our Saturday night show. We've got that all cataloged, all archived, video and audio. We also have, of course, the news feed. We have our merchandise shop. We have other miscellany, like other video TV pilots and video casts that we've done, including interviews that we've done. We've got a press section. And so it's all there for you at philhendryshow.com. And to become a Backstage Pass member is very, very easy. And then you're in on all the goodies, like Bonnie, who just got her mug, okay? Don't forget, we're over at Facebook and we're over at Twitter, and our one-man show ought to be a whole lot of fun.
You going to do giveaway next week?
Yeah, we'll have our BSP of the week next week as well, our Backstage Pass member of the week next week as well. We're also working on a feature for our Backstage Pass members. It's we're going to call it the radio, so that if you log in, you don't have to go through all of these archives to look for something to listen to, because there's literally thousands and thousands of hours. We're going to have a radio feature. You just punch a button and you can hear a live streaming show as we load it each day. So that's forthcoming as well. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
So, Frank's, did I tell you he's drunk?
Yes, Frank's drunk. He's not going to be happy with you when you get home.
Yeah, he's going to probably smack you around.
Frank won't smack me around much.
Phil Hendry.